This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange.
This pilot, though, who flew Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign, says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
An unidentified object seen over the sky above the Rosedale area.
The shot today video that's got all of Texas talking, probably the whole country, from iReporter, who shot this on a cell phone near Stephenville, Texas. It's a UFO, according to witnesses, and the witnesses include local police and other public figures.
When several dozen residents looked up and saw a UFO more than once.
Three very mysterious shiny lights over Breckenridge have police and residents puzzled.
Tonight we have never before seen videotape of UFOs over Colorado.
If you noticed strange lights in the sky over the weekend, you aren't alone. KCTV5's Alan Shope went to Lee's Summit to get to the bottom of more than a dozen UFO sightings.
Never before seen footage of UFO sightings this year are being shown at a conference in Pontefract.
Local police never definitively said who's to blame. Locals say it has to be something out of this world.
I'm taking a random picture, zoomed in, and there was a UFO.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unguarded, and the unemployed.
Ain't that the truth? Wow. You mean we don't get paid wheelbarrows of money for this show?
No, we don't. Unfortunately, the wheelbarrows have lost their wheels.
Right. This is just a labor of love. We're here for you, the listener.
That's right.
And our guests today from Port Townsend, Washington. Well, you guys aren't from Port Townsend, but you're currently residing.
We are now.
Yeah. We are now, yes.
James Clarkson and his beautiful wife, Joanne. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, Johnny. Yes, we're glad to be here.
There were some people asking recently about if anyone knew about that 1979 UFO crash around Markham, Westport. And you know what I told them? I told them to look at James Clarkson and his book.
Yay.
Thank you.
That's the truth. Well,
right.
He did a thorough investigation. In fact, he did it twice,
yes.
Really. The first one and then an update. And so, yes, we know all sorts of things about Westport.
Can you give us just kind of like a brief bio? I know you've been on the show before, but it seems like 10 years ago, so we might have acquired one or two listeners since then.
One would think.
Well, I can give it to you in a nutshell.
Okay.
I came to Washington State in 1975 as a military policeman fresh out of MP school. I fell in love with Washington State, decided to stay after a couple of years as a plainclothes MP at Fort Lewis. Honorable discharge. I ended up being a reserve deputy sheriff for Thurston County, a correctional officer, and then I was hired by the Aberdeen, Washington Police Department, where I spent the next 20 years as a commissioned officer, 10 years as a sergeant. I wore a whole bunch of different hats, including supervising the fatal accident team, being a detective sergeant. I had a problem with a bad knee, and I ended up changing careers a bit. I spent 2 years as a child abuse detective and then 10 years as a fraud investigator. And then I reached retirement age. But along the way, when I was a young policeman, and I finally got over my reluctance to tell my fellow officers that I was involved in the UFO subject because they are, shall we say, ruthless with practical jokes when they find out something like that. When we got past that, I started hearing all these stories, and everybody kept saying, something crashed down by Elk River, or do you know about the thing that landed by Westport? There were all sorts of rumors about that. And then I started doing some research, and actually I went to my local Timberland Library, and it turns out that they had been asked about it so many times that they had a file of newspaper clippings. And, oh, my God, when I got into the newspaper clippings, there it was. Because if you lived in the Grace Harbor area and you took the Aberdeen Daily World, I believe it was Monday, November 26th of 1979, you would have seen that the headline read, UFO crash in Elk River, question mark. And that was the first of five articles. And they were long articles. They even identified witnesses, and they were still living in the area. So this was like 6 years later, I thought, this is worthy of an investigation. So I went and recontacted all the witnesses, and the further I went, the better it got. And then I found a lot of other witnesses that were all giving me little bits and pieces of this same big story. But then I wasn't sure what to do with it, because my conclusion back then was that it was probably someone's military mistake. Like maybe something got launched from Fort Lewis or McChord Air Force Base, and it somehow went astray, and rather than admit that they almost dropped it on Westport, they came down onto the logging roads by the Elk River, and then they took it away and pretended like they were never there. So that, of course, would be a good story, but that wasn't quite what I thought it would be. But then Joanne went through the files a few years later, and Joanne found something. Do you want to tell about that, dear?
Yeah. Well, Jim had had a great deal of success with his June Crane story, and we needed to talk about something else. And so I said, you know, I was a librarian for 20 years, and I worked in Grace Harbor and Pacific Counties, and I knew that we had this file on the Westport crash, and that people came in and looked at it regularly. And so I said to Jim, you know, why don't you do the Westport crash? And he said, just like what he said, well, that was probably just a government project gone wrong. And I said, well, let me look at the files you have. So I reviewed his files. And in 1986, he'd done this study, and the Daily World had done a feature on him. And because of that, he'd gotten some letters from people. And this one letter, it was still in his envelope. I think he'd glanced at it, never given it much credibility. He got a lot of strange mail. But this one was from a person that I knew. His name was Alan Raymer, and he had a master's degree in marine biology, and he'd given many programs in the library on shellfish, actually. A well-educated man, a scientist, not a fanciful person. And he told Hal that he lived in 1979, he lived in Westport, but he worked in Aberdeen. And this was the Westport crash was on the Thanksgiving weekend, which is another reason I think people remembered it. You remember stuff around holidays.
Right.
And so the Monday after all the excitement, the thing crashed on a Sunday night. And on Monday, Alan went to work in Aberdeen, and then he said he went and worked out at the local gym, so he was driving home after dark. And as he got to the Johns River Bridge, which was actually where people saw the thing go into the hillside, a whole bunch of cars were parked along the side of the road, and people were out of their cars, standing there looking up in the sky. So Alan pulled over and got out of his car and looked up. And in the sky was this very large, bright object trailed by some smaller objects. He described it as a mother duck and her ducklings. And they finally came to hover over the area, essentially, where that UFO had gone down. And, well, whatever it was had gone down, the crash site. And they hovered there, and everybody was talking and looking. He said he was next to an elderly couple and then a woman with a baby. And they were all wondering what it was. And all of a sudden, the lights shot up faster than anything anybody had ever experienced in different directions, most of them going out over the water, and they were gone. But this was such a credible experience, and it had profoundly affected Alan. It was something truly extraordinary, and he, like I said, a scientist, and had seen many things, but he'd never seen anything like this.
Right.
So he came to our house and gave us an in-depth interview, which we taped. Jim has used. Jim asked him if he could use the story, and he said, "Sure, yeah, I have no problem. I saw this. I'd be glad to tell about it." And so he did. And he's such an articulate man; it really helps. And so Jim began to think maybe that was, quote, the other search party, and something quite significant did crash. This was also kind of backed up. I read another report. Jim had used this woman named Estella Kressel, who back then on that Sunday night was caring for her sick husband. And she happened to have a perfect view. They were watching Oh God on television.
Yes.
Movie of the week. And she had a view, she was looking outside her, the television face was in front of a window, let's put it that way. She was sitting by the sick bed, they were looking out the window, and she saw the craft come down, and she got a really good view of it coming from kind of the northeast across Central Park toward Westport. And she actually could draw a picture of it, and she saw kind of a cigar-shaped craft with windows in it. She couldn't see anybody, any passengers in the window, but she said she also was not a fanciful woman. I forget what she'd done for a living, but she said, she got the distinct impression that they were in trouble. This whatever it was in trouble.
Yeah, she kept saying, "They're in trouble. I know they're going down."
Hmm. Yeah, and she was also such a credible witness. And then, of course, just the plethora of other people that saw this thing. The military came in and shut down the roads. I can have Jim tell the rest of the story. But after we really got into reviewing the evidence, this was significant. This was something very, very, very strange that happened.
Yes. Right.
And affected a lot of people in their thinking and in their lives.
Some of my favorite witnesses in all of this were people who didn't know or care anything about the UFO aspect of it, and they just wanted to tell me about the time, in particular a couple of loggers that I bumped into, who wanted to brag to me about how they stood up to those soldiers with rifles out on the logging roads leading into the Elk River area. And as I think everybody who lives down there knows, there is no military training ground down there. There never has been. There's no reason for the military to seal off those logging roads unless they were providing security for something that had happened down there. So this fits perfectly with the whole idea of a military crash retrieval, and whatever it was, they knew that it was coming down. They would have had to have already been en route, or they would have never been able to respond that quickly.
Right. Wow. That's amazing.
That's amazing, yes.
It really is a good story. It's a better story than a lot of people give it credit for.
Or like off-duty police officers and in Grays Harbor. A couple of them, one told me he was out with his family driving in the Westport area, and he was fascinated because he was looking at large military vehicles leaving the logging roads and coming out onto the highway in the Westport area.
Wow.
I mean, that's just very odd. Or the gentleman who told me that he lived in a place in Westport where there was a real, honest-to-God phone booth down at the end of the driveway. I know many listeners probably may not even know what a phone booth was.
Right.
But those of us older people can recall those days. And he told me that one night he was fascinated because he watched this unmarked government sedan pull up next to the phone booth, and a man got out in full dress, army uniform, with some kind of, said he could see yellow on the bill of this guy's officer cap, and he got in and had a animated phone conversation with somebody and then jumped back in his government sedan and drove off. Well, you don't see that in Westport very often.
Right. Right. Wow. That's just bizarre.
It is.
So, Joanne, have you always been into UFOs, or how did you get involved in this whole thing?
Well, I've never, how should I say, I'm kind of a latecomer to the UFO, the whole mystery and everything involved in it, but I was, my grandmother was a psychic medium,
okay.
My maternal grandmother, mm-hmm. and she taught me to read playing cards when I was a child, And then when I was a teenager, I taught myself to read palms because I wanted a skill that nobody else in the family had, a psychic skill.
Right.
And so I've done that for years. And I, as a child, I won't go into the whole thing, but I saw, I was a very imaginative child. I was an only child. We lived out in the country. So I believe I saw angels. And actually, I should take that back. I did, I believe now that I did have a UFO experience as a very young child.
Mm-hmm.
That, well, I'll tell you the story, and you can, when I, like I said, I was an only child. We lived way out in the country, and I remember this more vividly over time, and I think a lot of us, as we grow older, somehow our childhood comes back to us, and we're in the middle of our lives. I was a librarian for 20 years, and I was a registered nurse for another 15. You're involved, and I was a mother and a wife, and, you know, you're involved in your life. You don't have a lot of time for a fanciful thought or even remembering, but as we get older, these things come back to us. But anyway, I was a little girl, and I was probably, I was no older than four because we moved from that house when I was four. But I was out in the yard, and it had rained, and I was playing in a puddle. I remember that. And the more this comes back to me, the more I can vividly remember this. And I don't have a lot of other vivid memories from that time. But I remember looking up into the sky, and we lived by a wooded area, but kind of behind the trees, I saw this large silver object in the sky, and it wasn't an airplane, it was just sitting there, and it was kind of elliptical, and I just watched it for a while, and I was just interested in it, and then for some reason I started to be fearful, so I ran in the house and I told my mother, and she told me it was a blimp. And so for years I thought, I remembered playing outside when I was a little girl and seeing a blimp. Well, as I've remembered this, though, subsequently, I realized my mother never went outside and saw what I was talking about. She was talking on the phone. I remember that. And I was obviously upset. I'd run in the house, so I must have described something. So she said, oh, it's just a blimp.
Right.
You know, my mother was a very matter-of-fact person. She was not a psychic. But as I think back on it, I don't think it, what would have, I mean, there were, this was, say, 1953 or 54. And was the Goodyear blimp around Seattle then? Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But why would it be way out in North Seattle hovering over a remote neighborhood?
Right.
And I don't remember any markings on it. It's, there certainly were not large letters emblazoned on it.
Yeah.
I was an early reader. I'm not sure I could quite read them, but I would have known if there was
right.
a big G
a logo
on it,
or designs or something on it.
Yeah.
And that wasn't there. And the fact that I do remember it so vividly and the fact that I had this kind of strange reaction to it leads me to think that perhaps I did see something extraordinary. But anyway, but I didn't, I wasn't necessarily directed to, or interested in the UFO thing per se so much as just I've always been interested in psychic phenomena and believed in it. Certainly angel visitations, being able to talk to the dead. My dad died when I was a little girl, and I know for years he watched over me and even came to visit me, things like that. So when I'm actually when I met Jim, which we met because of Bigfoot, actually, I became more interested in the UFO thing specifically.
Right. And, you know, you gave a 5-star presentation at a UFO summit here in Ocean Shores on your experiences in hospice. And I just thought that was amazing what you did. And I understand you guys just got back from another conference?
Yes.
Yes.
You want to tell them, Jim? Why don't you
It was the 20th annual McMinnville, Oregon UFO Festival, which is an event sponsored by the McMinniman's Corporation and the city of McMinnville, Oregon. They go together to make this thing happen, and it's been getting bigger and bigger every year. And it all started because they had a discussion talking about some very famous UFO photos that were taken by the Trent family, who live just outside of McMinnville. This occurred on May 11th of 1950, and I think she was outside feeding the rabbits. It was something real mundane like that. And she looked up in the sky and observed a very large, classic, saucer-shaped, metallic aircraft moving around in the air. She yelled for her husband, And he had a camera that had a few extra frames left on it. Bear in mind, this is back in the days of film cameras, not digital.
Mm-hmm.
And he came outside and took pictures of it and produced a series of photographs. They've been debated back and forth over the years. Is this faked? Is it real? Etc. But oddly enough, in the 1968 publication that was supposed to be the summation of everything that Project Blue Book in the Air Force did on the subject of unidentified flying objects, this was included in the back. They had this whole lot of filler where they just threw in cases, and it's obvious they didn't realize what they were putting in there because the scientific analysis that was included with the Trent photos, it goes something like all other thing factors having been analyzed, these appear to be fully 100% legitimate photos of some kind of large metallic object in the sky over the Trent farm. The Trents never made any money on it. In their latter years when they were getting ready to pass on, they actually said they wished they had never seen the thing, never reported it, etc., because like as has happened to many UFO witnesses, they suffered a lot of grief because they made a report.
Right. Yeah.
And I think the Air Force took the negatives and they wouldn't give them back. And I mean, it was, there's a whole big long story that goes with it, but they're remarkable photographs. But anyway, the city of McMinnville and McMinniman's, they had the Hotel Oregon in downtown McMinnville, they thought, well, let's have a UFO lecture. Well, that drew an overflow crowd. So they realized as time went on that they had to make this thing bigger because there was way more demand for it than they thought. So they ended up with a full day of speakers, adding more rooms. Pretty soon they were across the street, taking over an old theater. Then they got the community center up the street, which seats about 800 people in stadium seating. It's a gorgeous building. And now they actually had a couple of events this time. For the first time, they had sellout crowds.
Wow.
It was amazing. And wow. They also have all these other events. They have UFO lectures, but they also have more alien-related fun in one place than I think of anywhere else. They have, you know, they have a alien run. They have wine tasting. They have vendors. They have a big alien parade, which the whole town turns out for, and they have all the marching bands and rock bands, everybody dressed up like aliens or space people. And
don't forget the dress up your pet as an alien.
Yes, dress up your pet as an alien.
I saw more green chihuahuas over the weekend than I've ever seen in my life.
That's
awesome.
More
green than a St. Patrick's Day parade.
Right.
Well, and then they have the speakers sit in various cars and wave to the crowd, and I've gotten to do that a couple times now.
That's
and
fun.
It's great fun.
Yeah. More with James and Joanne Clarkson, UFOs, Tarot, Palm Reading, coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, Ghosts, UFOs, Alien, Sasquatch, All Things Strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and on the phone we have Joanne and James Clarkson. Billy.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to know about this palm reading. What do you do when you read a palm? What are you looking for?
That's a really good question. I describe palm reading as discovering your tendencies and talents, or your personality and your purpose. It's amazing what people's palms reveal. I started reading palms publicly when I was 15, and now I'm 69. That's a long time.
That's a long time.
So I've been able to trace the palms of people that I knew over time, and so they do change. Your non-dominant hand, the left hand in most people, is your potential, and your dominant hand, the right hand in most people, is how you've developed it. So one thing palmists do, of course, is compare the two hands. People think of reading a palm usually as reading the lines of the palm, but it's much more than that. I usually start with the thumb. During the great palmistry renaissance, when mainstream people took it beyond just gypsies, which started happening in about 1900, some of the most famous psychics only read the thumb. The bottom of your thumb, which is actually a muscle, is your kind of your life force energy. That's your Mount of Venus. And then the middle part is your judgment, and the top is your willpower. And so besides kind of assessing that, then you look at the fingers. The fingers are divided, obviously, into three sections, the bottom section being kind of the earth practical connection, the middle part being the more scientific, sometimes mathematical, certainly organization and design, and the top part being your ability to abstract, other intelligences, and looking at how the tips of the fingers are shaped tells something. And then there is the palm, and you do read the lifeline, the line of reason, the heart line, and then the fate line and the smaller lines. And you can tell whether you're more of an analytical, logical, scientific person, if you're more of a dreamer. And then the lifeline doesn't tell how long you're going to live, which is, if a palmist tells you by looking at your lifeline how long you're going to live, you need to get your money back, even if it was free. Your lifeline can certainly lets me know kind of what happened along your life. In fact, I read a very famous palm at the McMenamins conference, and I looked at this guy, and at the very kind of beginning of his lifeline, he had a very large island, kind of a round, broken place in it, and I said, well, I said, your life has been an interesting life, but you had a lot of significant changes, perhaps some trauma in your early life. And he said, no, my life was like Leave It to Beaver. I had a perfect childhood, a great life. And his wife looks at him and says, well, when you got older, you did. She said, but you were abandoned by your mother. You were abducted when you were a baby, and you'd gone through all sorts of things. He said, that's what that's about. And he said, oh, yeah, I guess there was that. So you can tell landmarks. You can tell people that have had to keep secrets. You can tell. My specific focus at the McMinnville's thing was how to identify psychic signs in the palm, because I figured people that went to a UFO conference would probably be a fairly intuitive, imaginative sort of bunch. And the palms I got to read then, I found some really amazing people. Your Mount of the Moon is across from your thumb at the kind of the bottom of your hand. If you look at your hand, most hands aren't hollow in the middle, but there is a little upswing kind of at the bottom there, and that's your Mount of the Moon. And that's where a lot of your intuition, psychic power comes from. So you can have stars there, you can have whorls there, you can have lines coming off that, the run up into your palm. There are a number of ways to see that you really are more intuitive than the average bear, as it were. So that's a really quick snapshot of how you read a palm.
Me and Belly are here staring at our palms.
Yep, I'm sure you are.
Do you ever look at, like, James's palm and go, hey, wait a minute, do you got the credit card? How much did you spend today? Or anything like that?
Well, I am the cheaper one. That is kind of true. But no, but I did, before I married Jim, I did look at his palm.
Oh, yeah?
You can be sure of that. Yeah, that's how I had, way back in the 80s, I lived for a little while in Illinois, and then we moved back to the Northwest, and I had some friends who were seeking husbands, and this one especially used to, anybody that she started getting serious about, she'd photocopy their hand and send it to me to be sure they weren't an axe murderer.
Yeah,
Lori in her palms, to be sure they weren't axe murderers, and I always told her, if you even suspect the person is an axe murderer, for heaven's sakes, don't date him.
That's right.
You know, so
any conferences coming up that you're going to be at?
Well, the biggest thing coming up is Into the Mystic, which is happening right here in Port Townsend, Washington, June 21st and 22nd. It's the seventh one. It's always around the summer solstice. It's sponsored by the Unity Church, but it's a psychic gathering. It's awesome, and I am the chairperson this year and also a reader. One reason we moved to Port Townsend is because for the previous 3 years, because we had friends up here, I had come and been a reader at this event. It's an amazing event. This year we have 13 psychics. They read everything from palms, tarot, Akashic records. They can do your astrology. They can do soul work. They do channeling. Really powerful psychics. And then we also have 5 programs going on during Into the Mystic. And one of them, the final program on Saturday night at 7, is Jim doing, what's the title of it?
UFOs, How We Are Changed.
Exactly.
Ooh, nice.
I know, and it's only $10 a head. So if people are looking for a fun thing, I know Grace Harbor is wonderful, but if you want to get away for a brief getaway, you can just come up here to Port Townsend the Friday the 21st and Saturday the 22nd of June. Have your palm read, have your astrological chart done, have your soul channeled, and go to some really cool programs. What a weekend is that.
And where's it going to be at?
It's at the Unity Church, which I think the address is 3918 San Juan, but it's right across from the Blue Heron Middle School, and that's what everybody knows.
Okay.
So to get in is free. There's going to be a metaphysical book sale going on and some sacred objects, so if you want to pick up a new tarot deck or a pendulum or something, we got those. Yeah,
my mom started out when I was very young reading the deck of cards and then tarot and then runes and medicine wheel, all the stuff. All confusing to me, but so I'm a little bit familiar with it, but not well versed. Are you?
I've met your mother. Your mother is an extremely insightful, powerful person. She's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah.
That's where I get it.
Yeah.
Billy, did you have any questions or anything?
No, it's all fascinating. You know, I love especially the palm reading and tarot card reading, and I'm always fascinated by that. You know, it just amazes me that you can be so accurate, you know, in looking at a person's life, not just where they're going, but where they've been. You know, I think there's certainly some validity to these readings. I know some people say, oh, well, it's just power of suggestion. You know, if I tell you you're going to get married, you're going to go out and get married.
Let me answer that a little bit, because I was also asked this question about tarot recently. Another skeptical person says, how can you really think that a piece of paper can tell someone something significant? And it isn't. That's just the vehicle and the medium. I started out, I think like your mama, Johnny, reading regular playing cards, not even tarot. And the idea is, when you're truly, truly a psychic medium, you're just the vehicle for the universe to talk to someone. And so the secret of being a good medium, of course, is to get yourself totally out of the way and just allow yourself to be a channel. So you work with the person that's come for the reading, and just in all sincerity with the person, ask the universe what the message is, what the person most needs to know about their life right now. And I like to use tarot because they're really beautiful. I have like a dozen decks. There's one I usually use for the public right now. I have another one I use if we're contacting people that have gone to the other side like that. But I invite the reader to look with me at these beautiful symbols because, you know, source, spirit, whatever you call it, doesn't really speak English. Although I do get messages in my head that are worded sometimes, but still, it has to have a way to connect. And a lot of times these really beautiful images speak to the person. And so I invite them. I don't know most of the people I read, so, you know, there's a lot of their lives I have no idea about. So they might see the one symbol in the tarot that really, really answers their question that I would have is not related to the traditional meaning of the card. So I've had people remark on red doors and green shoes and blue eyes, all sorts of things, you know, that, wow, they think this really tells them where they're supposed to go. When I do a reading, I usually start with a palm so we can tell people's kind of their personality, kind of who they are, how they'll receive information, and then kind of what I see is their pathway, maybe some hidden talents they never knew of or were afraid to honor that are just begging to be fulfilled in their hands. And then I use the tarot to answer specific questions. You know, well, if I'm really supposed to be a great artist, should I go back to school? Or should I, you know, that kind of thing. And the tarot is much more specific.
Have you or James ever seen a palm or met someone at a conference that just kind of like freaked you out?
You know, the freakiest palm that I ever saw was my son's. I had my son when I was 27. He was my first child. And, of course, right after he was born, I looked at his little tiny hands. And there is a sign when, you know, most people have three lines in their hands. The top one is the heart line, the middle one is the line of reason, and then there's the lifeline that goes around your thumb. And one way that pediatricians or anyone tells if the child is mentally retarded, and specifically Down syndrome, is if they have what's called a simian line, one line, just a single line across their palms. And I looked at my son's hands, and he had a single line across both palms.
Ooh.
I was just freaked out.
Right.
The pediatrician happened to be in the room at the time, and she saw my eyes get big as saucers, and she said, yes, I saw that too, but he checks out in every way, and I do not think that he's mentally deficient. And of course he isn't. My son is very successful. He's an attorney. He has a wonderful family, two beautiful little girls, a wonderful wife. But this one hand, and now as he's gotten older, he's developed a lifeline on both hands that he did not have when he was born. But that's kind of grown. And then this big line in the middle of his hand, though, one thing he does struggle with is whether his heart dominates or his head dominates. His heart dominates or his head dominates. And I think that's always kind of been, he's basically a really nice guy, although he's a powerful attorney. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what, but I'll tell you, for a couple of years after that, I did not read palms. I thought, this can't possibly be true. I was waiting for something wretched to manifest from my son. And it never did. So I learned, that taught me, for one thing, if I was really going to continue to do this, which I felt called to do, it isn't just the lines that are important. He had a very interesting shape to his hands, and very interesting. He's a very active guy, very active tips of the fingers, very smart, a smart guy. You know, so then when my daughter was born, her palm was pretty much just like mine. So that's...
So how could a person that's interested in palm reading or interested in, you know, UFO research, how could they get more involved? How could they learn the crafts that you guys have learned?
I taught myself to read palms from books in the public library, and there are still really good books about that, both Palm and Tarot in the public library. Timberland, you know, I worked for Timberland for years. They could go into the Aberdeen Library, the Westport Library, the Holcomb Library, and if the books they want aren't immediately there, of course they can request them for them from other Timberland libraries or from through interlibrary loan for anywhere. UFOs, there's a lot of, you tell them, Jim.
Well, there's a number of ways. If you wanted to join a formal organization, you could apply to the Mutual UFO Network. They have information online, MUFON.com, that will tell you how to join. If you choose to kind of walk your own path, you should start doing a lot of reading. I highly recommend historical research reading in the field of UFOs. And I think you have to find people that you trust that you think sound reasonable. There's a lot of good sources out there. It always comes down to a signal versus noise problem. There's also a lot of noise out there. There are things and people that I will tell you I just flat out don't believe. I don't think we're being told the truth by a number of sources.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to choose for yourself. And I always tell people whenever I give a presentation, I am not here to tell you what to believe. I am here to help you ask better questions, because I think the UFO mystery is really important and really worthy of study, but a lot of this you're going to have to make up your own mind.
I want to say one more thing about tarot reading, too. I've given a lot of classes on both palmistry and tarot, and I always tell people, if you really want to know how to read tarot cards, go buy a deck. It's going to come with a little booklet. You can look stuff up, but don't let yourself look too much up. People can now not do public readings, but read tarot for yourself without really much instruction at all, because, like I said, it's just a tool for contacting the universe. So you take your deck, you look through it a few times, get familiar with the images, see what draws you, then every morning get up and pick a card. And before you look in the little book and see what the traditional meaning is, see what it says to you.
Mm-hmm.
See what the beautiful flower or the owl or the numbers, you know, see what it says to you and make yourself just intuit the meaning. That's how you really learn.
What about those people that say you're messing with fire and that's dangerous and stuff? What would you say to them?
They have some inner fears about who they are and what they want to know. That isn't necessarily... I do, before I give any reading or any presentation, I surround myself, the person and the whole area, with blessing and protection.
Mm-hmm.
Because, not to say there isn't bad energy out there. We want to be sure we're only calling the best.
Right.
Do you read auras?
Do I read what?
Auras.
Oh, auras.
Yeah.
I see auras sometimes. I have not consciously been an aura reader, but I think that's fascinating and has a great deal of validity. Every once in a while you look at somebody, and actually I used this when I was a nurse too. You can look at people and know if they're sick or not, and you don't even have to be a psychic sometimes.
That's right.
Sometimes people's life force energy is just really dim, and other times it's just shining. I tend to see the shiners. I look out at a crowd, like when I was at your festival speaking, Johnny,
mm-hmm.
I did that. I remember looking out into the crowd, and I could literally see a few people, maybe half a dozen, just glowing. I mean, just incredible. I thought, whoa. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to really struggle not to be distracted by that.
Yeah. Maybe we can talk you guys into coming back.
Well, we hope we can come back. We were really sad. We had planned, we had hoped to come this year, you know, but we both underwent some kind of serious health challenges, and mm-hmm. we thought Jim was going to have open heart surgery, this spring. And that didn't happen.
I dodged a bullet.
He did.
Well, that's good.
It will never happen, but it didn't happen now.
Right.
And then I've been so much better. I've been going to a naturopath that I just love. She's just wonderful. It's stressful to move, even if it's kind of positive. And we went through a couple of kind of stressful years, and now we're doing great.
Do you guys attend the Olympic UFO meetups that go on in that area with Maureen Morgan?
We've been to some.
Mm-hmm.
We don't go all the time because, quite frankly, I can't figure out where the time goes. I end up way more busy retired than I think when I was working.
I've heard that before.
Does happen.
You know, and then we have a big family. We have five kids between us, and then now we've got the four little grandkids. And yeah, I know that they're the best. Being a grandma is like one of the best things that ever happened to me, that's for sure. So we spend a lot of time with them, and they visit us sometimes, or we go visiting. So
there's a lot going on.
Is there any future book writing in either of your futures?
Aha.
Go ahead.
Well, I have been encouraged by various people and entities to write another book, so I am trying to write a summation of whatever it is that I think is true about the entire UFO phenomena. So I'm selecting out the best stories, reports, sightings, etc., and trying to get them all into one volume.
When can we hopefully see that?
Well, I think it's probably realistically going to be next year. We're going to a writer's conference later this summer, which I'm hoping is going to help me figure out how best to organize it.
Mm-hmm. Any appearances anytime soon?
One that I have scheduled right now is the city of Chehalis and the Lewis County Historical Museum are trying a brand new event called the Chehalis Flying Saucer Party that will occur on September 21st, 2019, an all-day event with speakers, exhibits, vendors, live music, etc., and I get to be one of the speakers. It's going to basically be focused on the fact that the very famous aviator, Kenneth Arnold, took off from Chehalis, Washington, in a small airplane on June 24th of 1947 on his way to Yakima, and while flying across Mount Rainier on a beautiful day, he saw a formation of metallic crescent-shaped craft. And when he landed, a newspaper reporter asked him, well, how did they fly? He said, well, like a saucer over the water. And that newspaper man wrote down the phrase flying saucer and changed the English language. So as a person who loves UFOs in Washington State, you can always look at all those other UFO researchers and say they came here first. But anyway, September 21st, 2019, Lewis County Historical Museum, Chehalis, Washington, that's going to be the place to be. Should be fun.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today, and
yes.
I know Bill appreciates it here, too. You guys were in tough negotiations to get you back here to the UFO Summit next March. I know we're going to pound it out and get you guys here, right?
All right.
Oh, we'd love to come. We had so much fun at the conferences that, you know, we did attend. The year before last, we were, of course, right in the process of moving. We just sold our house, and then we didn't have anywhere to go. So we were, you know, that was, and then this year.
That was an adventure.
And then this year, with all the health stuff, we were very disappointed that we didn't get to come, at least as a participant, if not a presenter. So we're hopeful, Johnny, we can come next year.
All right. Well, where can I find more information on any of you guys and what we've talked about today?
Well, I'm at www.joannethepsychic.com, and Jim is, there's an E on the Joanne, Joanne, J-O-A-N-N-E, the
correct.
Psychic. And Facebook, too, Joanne the Psychic on Facebook.
Okay.
James Clarkson. UFO.com, or you can write to me at UFOReality@comcast.net.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Johnny. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
It's always a lot of fun.
Well, James and Joanne Clarkson. Now, James used to be like the state director for MUFON. I don't know if you got a chance to see her presentation when she did speak at the UFO Paranormal Summit, and it had people crying, like sobbing in the audience.
Yeah, I didn't get to see it. But.
And all she was doing was just sharing experiences in hospice and things that happened like before death, and but then things that happened after. Not to her, but like to the family that she worked for, or you know, someone in a facility, and just... just the strange things.
And this is the power of the energy of the universe.
That stuff you've been telling me about?
Yeah, that stuff we've been talking about. when you tap into that and you can, especially when you have an audience, there's kind of a group dynamic that takes place where everybody starts to share that energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, if the right person can step up and channel some of that energy, everybody feels it. Now, everybody reacts differently, but and some people try to deny it. It's whenever you have a group of people together and they start to think on the same wavelength, then energy of the universe is incredibly powerful.
And I think that's where the problem lies. We have to get people to think.
Well, yes, they've got to think. And they have to join together.
Yeah.
It's... you know, it's about the power of the group. It's the power of the masses.
Well, it sounds like a bunch of New Age Tui. And if you want to yell at Billy about his New Age Tui or to listen to back episodes, you can even actually watch some of the episodes. Just log on to strangeharbor.net.
And don't look at me.
Are you going to say your thing?
Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, Ghosts, UFOs, Alien, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor.